I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the flagship edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday afternoon releases from WWE, NXT and ROH results, and Beyond Wrestling hits Powerbomb TV. All this, plus Triple H gets ready to go on the road with Raw. SmackDown gets ready to hit Europe. And we'll be talking live with all of you. This is Wrestling Night in America on PW Torch Livecast. And we welcome you into the PW Torch Livecast studios. My name is Pat McNeil. Hello, you people. I am a columnist for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, and my co-host is also a columnist for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. Let's say hello to our good friend, Mr. Greg Parks. Greg, are you there?
I am, Pat.
Hey, wonderful to have you with us on another Wrestling Night in America. Again, we might be calling somebody to be a guest tonight, although I'm not 100% sure that the gentleman said yes, but there is a lot going on Sunday night in professional wrestling, as per usual, and it's good to talk to you again, Greg. Let's start with this. We had three releases this afternoon from WWE. First, of course, Summer Rae, then Darren Young. The one that I would say was actually a surprise would be Emma. Emma just wrestled at last week's TLC pay-per-view and on Raw, and although rumors were around that Emma had asked for her release, it sure didn't sound that way when Emma went on to Twitter.
Yeah, like you said, Summer Rae, Darren Young, not exactly surprises. Darren Young had been injured early in the year, was working his way back on house shows. I don't believe he's been on TV yet, and Summer Rae hasn't been on TV in probably a year, maybe more. Those two not surprises. Emma, I don't know if I'd classify her as a surprise just based on where she is in the pecking order of the women on the main roster. And getting a gimmick where you constantly complain about you starting the Women's Revolution and making a big fuss on television of your social media presence, that's not usually a good sign. And Emma losing to Asuka. She was used to put over Asuka. We can sit here and debate, as we did last weekend, about whether or not Emma should have gotten as much offense and wrestle as 50-50 as she did with Asuka, not only at the pay-per-view last weekend, but also on Monday Night Raw the next night. But she put Asuka over twice, and that was clearly her role when she won the match on Raw to face Asuka. You know, there was no... nobody thought Emma was going to come out and surprise Asuka with a victory. So, you know, she's clearly below even the Alicia Foxes of the women on Raw on the totem pole. So I can't say her getting released was a surprise. I'd say the timing is a surprise based on her being more visible in the last week against Asuka. And also, and I go back to it, the way she was portrayed in those matches against Asuka. One has to wonder, you know, how long this release has been in the making. If this is something, you know, based on how she wrestled against Asuka, I can't imagine WWE knew a week ago that she was going to get released soon. That must mean that something happened within the last few days to cause WWE to release her. And, you know, this just happened, as you said, earlier this afternoon. So not a lot of details out about the rhyme and reason behind these releases. So Emma is one I would expect to have some more details in the next few days, or to hear some about what led to the release.
Yes. Now, in a story which you wouldn't think you'd have to, following the release of somebody, Leo Rush, who debuted recently on NXT, had to go online and apologize for making a joke about WWE releasing Emma. Because, you know, A, too soon, B, like somebody like Peyton Royce said, you've been here for, what, 12 minutes? You know, Leo Rush has a reputation for maybe rubbing people the wrong way. I liked his debut match against Patrick Clark. I mean, he's not, you know, it showcased what Leo Rush, you know, does well. It's not that he's just quick in the ring. He's sudden. He moves faster than most anybody this side of Ricochet. But it doesn't seem like he's endearing himself to people.
No, and, you know, the tweet was, it wasn't, in my mind, and granted, you know, anytime you seem to take pleasure in someone losing a job, it's never a good thing, but this was not him being hurtful, I don't think on purpose. You know, it was not a mean-spirited joke. It was something about how Emma couldn't handle Asuka, and, you know, that's part of Asuka's gimmick. It was in line with the storyline, you know. But a lot of factors in play here. As you said, first, he's new to WWE, so he doesn't have the background to be making comments like that. Second of all, he's, as you said again, he's got a reputation, and people are on the lookout for missteps like this, and they're going to come down hard on him. And the WWE roster did. They came down hard on him. If he was an independent wrestler making this observation or making this joke, I don't know that we would have heard a lot of backlash, but he's now a WWE employee or independent contractor, as it were, and he's got to know better than to stick his nose into that kind of business the way he did here. And, you know, even the apology wasn't, I don't think, what a lot of people were looking for. It was lacking, I think, to a lot of people. So not a good day for Leo Rush either today.
Nope. Let's see. Well, I mean, I do have some questions as to, you know, for example, it would seem that with Emma gone, somebody's going to be brought up to the main roster, or somebody's going to be on the Raw roster who wasn't there previously to fill that spot. And I don't know who that is yet, and this probably isn't, you know, I'm not sure I want to speculate. I think it would be for everybody's advantage to find somebody who was on the who did well in the Mae Young tournament who hasn't been on NXT yet.
Sure. Because, there are a lot of women right now in NXT. We saw this past week on TV an NXT Battle Royal featuring a lot of women, and that was discounting the ones that had already wrestled in triple threat matches in trying to get a place in the match at TakeOver to find the next NXT Women's Champion. So certainly the NXT women's locker room is crowded right now. You know, they could, if WWE truly wanted to change the presentation of the women on the main roster, they could call up a half a dozen women. They're deserving in NXT of a spot on the main roster. You'd probably have to carve out a few more segments per Raw and SmackDown for the women in order to accommodate them all, or you would just maybe have them wrestling live events and maybe only appearing on SmackDown and Raw once every few weeks. Not all of the male roster is utilized every week on Raw and SmackDown. So, you know, you don't have to do that for the women. So there's certainly room on both brands, even with the little time they do get on TV, the couple segments per week. They could finagle it to where they could call up a few women.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Okay, the other big news is it looks like Roman Reigns isn't going to be headlining the UK tour, at least the first part of it, when WWE Raw heads over there, since Triple H has been added to the first five shows starting November 1st, which is Wednesday, and continuing through November the 5th. Now, let's see, we don't know who Triple H is necessarily facing in the main event. I'm guessing it's somebody like Miz, which actually Miz would make perfect sense for that sort of thing, since that they already did Triple H and Rusev when he went to SmackDown. But it's a sign that you're not going to have a lot of roster depth here, heading into Survivor Series, and we don't really know how long Roman Reigns or Bray Wyatt are going to be out.
And that's the key. Survivor Series is coming up, and you'd like to have all hands on deck for that because it is Raw and SmackDown, and you're taking the biggest guys, the biggest names from both of those brands, as it is a brand war, as it were, and as we saw this past week on Monday Night Raw. So to not have two big names like Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt, and again, we don't know their status heading into Survivor Series, but as you mentioned, certainly the changes to the upcoming UK tour make it seem that Reigns is going to be out for longer than just a week or two that was originally speculated. It's an opportunity for other wrestlers. With Reigns and Wyatt, you would assume that they would be in the elimination tag match representing Raw, and perhaps that's why we never got around to the announcement this past week. WWE wants to see the health of these guys and whether or not they're going to be able to make it into that match. So no names have been announced, but again, without Reigns and Wyatt, it's going to be an opportunity for a couple other guys on the roster to step up and to rub elbows with their fellow Raw main eventers and with the SmackDown ones in the match as well.
Yeah, that's all of this news is kind of curious as we head forward into Survivor Series. Now, we do have Bound for Glory is a week from today, and we'll talk about that later. We're not sure exactly how we're going to work it next Sunday, whether we'll be doing the post-game show or whether Mike and Andrew are going to be doing the post-game show here. We'll be doing a show Sunday. We're just not sure when it is or what it'll be about. That's fair, right?
Well, I'll be there whenever you need me.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that. Okay, the number here is 515-605-9345. We're going to start taking calls after the first break, I think. Let's see. Oh, yeah. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time, you can, on Sunday night, we like to keep things moving. You can ask up to three questions. You can make up to three comments, but at the end of the day,
three, that's a magic number.
And by orders of management, this is supposed to be a PG show that is friendly to the soccer mom crowd. So what I guess I'm trying to say is if we can ever get this thing to fire off like it's supposed to.
While we're waiting for our next caller, we'd like to remind you.
Yeah, hold on. It's just going to be that kind of night, folks. Okay, we don't have a guest star tonight.
While we're waiting for our next caller, we'd like to remind you folks calling in to, keep your questions within the boundaries of good taste.
Okay, so when we come back from this timeout, we're going to be talking about all of the exciting things that happened this past week and the exciting things still to come. Like Greg, for example, I'm told that Raw is under siege. Have you heard that?
Briefly, something about a Steven Seagal movie. I don't know.
Yes. Well, I'm pretty sure that was the movie they're talking about. I'm pretty sure it wasn't The Glimmer Man. Anyway, we will be back with more of Wrestling Night in America. So, stay tuned.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Wrestling Night in America returns here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I am Pat McNeil. He is Greg Parks. The number here is 515-605-9345. The other way you can reach us, you can reach us via email, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. You can reach us at Twitter. I'm at RealPatMcNeil. He is at Greg M. Parks. And the chat room is open here at pwtorchlivecast.com, where if you have any comments, you can drop them off there, and we'll get around to them as soon as we can. Tell you what, Greg, are you ready to go to the phones?
I'm ready.
Okay. We are going to bravely travel to the 615 area code. That's Tennessee. 615, please state your name and town. You are on Wrestling Night in America with Pat and Greg, and this thing is going to fire any second now. Hold on. Come on. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, this is Kenny from Gallatin, Tennessee. It's great to chat with you guys again. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing well. We appreciate it.
Hey, I got only just a couple of questions, and they're both non-WWE related. One involves Jeff Jarrett, and one involves the NWA. So which one do you guys want to go to first?
Well, let's tackle Jarrett first, since you brought it up first.
Okay. Well, you know, it's obviously it's in the news, so I won't go into much detail about it. Obviously, it's been a rough week, as you know, from Jeff Jarrett, involving what happened in Canada and all the problems that he's had lately. And of course, me being from Tennessee, you know, growing up watching him for so many years, it's just really sad to see what he's been going through, especially since he worked real hard, obviously trying to make the situation with Impact working. And it just seems like it's just slowly being unraveled. Personally, I hope that he gets the much needed help he needs and gets his life back up to speed to where it is. I think he has definitely the strength and capacity and will to break through it. And all I would just have to say, just wish him the best of luck in that. And I just want to get your guys' opinion on, with all that that's happened, and considering they have so much taped episodes of Impact have, with all these promotions that were largely put together by Jeff Jarrett himself, what do you think will be the end result of going forward now with Anthem, as far as how are they going to be able to handle all these deals? You know, can they handle them separately without Jeff Jarrett now that he's pretty much out of the picture? Where are we going with Impact after Bound for Glory, you think?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I think that, you know, Jarrett's gone, but they still have Sanjay Dutt and Scott D'Amore, who were very close with Jarrett, who were running things, and probably and Big John Gaborik. And I think that among them, they probably have all of the contacts that they need to continue these relationships with outside promotions. Greg, I'm also wondering if they're saving money, do you think, how serious do you think they're going to be about flying guys in from Mexico and Japan anyway?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, too. Impact seems to vacillate between saving money mode and then, you know, shelling out big bucks if a guy like Alberto El Patron comes along. They had talks with Rey Mysterio Jr. as well. So, you know, it seems to go back and forth a little bit on that, and you're never really sure where they stand and with the money situation. You know, I agree with you, Pat. I think that they'll be okay as far as their relationship with Noah and Crash and some of the independent, even American promotions that they've had partnerships with through Jeff Jarrett or through Scott D'Amore or whomever in the Impact front office. You know, you got to remember, Jeff Jarrett may have brought this stuff into Impact. This was his idea for the original Global Force Wrestling, was to partner with all these companies. And then when he took over Impact, he sort of brought that idea to Impact and then rebranded it GFW. But I think enough contacts and contracts are in place with these outside companies, with possibly more to come, that I don't think you're going to see a lot change with Jarrett out of the picture now.
Yeah, I think that I can't even keep track of who's on the roster. I mean, I know outside of the guys who are obviously appearing at Bound for Glory, I know that Alberto El Patron is on the roster. He was supposed to wrestle Jeff Jarrett at Bound for Glory, and apparently he will now wrestle nobody instead. So that's very much everything is very much in flux. I think we're going to have to wait until after Bound for Glory, when they do the next, you know, 3 months of tapings, to get a better idea of what's coming up. I do know that they'll be doing a taping at WrestleCade, and they've announced that WrestleCade's main event will be, this will shock you, Eli Drake versus Johnny Impact versus Jack Swagger, which it's pretty close to being a rematch of Bound for Glory. So I expect that main roster feud is going to continue for a while. Other than that, you know, you've got to remember, though, Kenny, a lot of the people who are on this show, who are in major roles coming up at Bound for Glory, are new. I think between the new LAX and the Chris brothers, I think they've been in a total of 6 months in Impact combined. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, plus, you look at, I mean, Johnny Impact, John Morrison is new. It's, you know, they've got guys like EC3 and James Storm in the opening match. I'm expecting, if anything, more flux to come after the pay-per-view.
It's a very fluid roster right now.
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely a fluid roster, and it's glad to hear that these deals will be able to continue with Impact because, you know, some people have their opinions on it. I, for one, am kind of glad that we get to see different wrestlers that we only get to hear about, but we really don't get to see maybe other than some YouTube clips. So in a way, it kind of does serve a purpose, but again, you know, it just depends on what the mode is like. You hear stories about, you know, is Anthem in the money-saving mode, and then they go and now you hear that Jack Swagger might possibly be, you know, being involved in Bound for Glory. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of wonder what the direction is sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be like, you know, I think it's going to be much like Jeff Jarrett's time in Memphis was, where there's a core group of guys, you know, like six or eight guys who are there full time, and other people will be moving in and out. I don't think there's going to be a lot. In fact, I don't think there are going to be many full-timers there at all, Greg.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of Impact is going to look like what the episode we saw this past week, where I think there was one match in front of the Impact audience, the main event of Lashley versus Moose, and the rest of the show was filled out with matches involving Impact wrestlers from the Crash promotion in Mexico, from Noah. Eddie Edwards wrestled in that match, and then from Demore's Border City Wrestling in Canada. So, you know, I think that's an interesting concept, and I like that they are filming matches in these other companies and showing them on Impact. I think it does give the sense that Impact has a worldwide reach, and I feel like show that Impact is a major league promotion. So I kind of like that concept, too. I like and you're not burning out the Impact Zone crowds when you're taping, you know, 4 or 5 hours in front of the same crowd. Maybe you're not taping as many matches because you're pulling matches from these other promotions that you've taped them at.
Okay. Your next question you said was about the NWA.
Yeah, and stop me if I've mentioned this once before, but I guess you know by now Billy Corgan did an interview saying that, you know, they're done with the regional territory concept, and now they're going to literally turn the NWA into a national promotion. And they've really been, of course, aggressive with the YouTube channel and promoting Tim Storm, like, you know, shot him up literally like up to the cannon, per se. And I guess really my question is, you know, in a way, I'm glad to see that they are at least trying to adapt and to make it work. But, you know, considering that we've now just seen him on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, you know, Tim Storm, is it likely that we might see a scenario where Alberto El Patron, we just mentioned his name, as the NWA World Heavyweight Champion in the future? Is that where we're going with this?
I really don't know where we're going with this. You know, I mean, Billy Corgan is, you know, let's see. Okay. Turner took over Jim Crockett Promotions in, what, 1988? And they officially, the two sides officially split, I think, in 91 before sort of joining back together, the NWA and World Championship Wrestling. And in that time, there have been a lot of people who have been given charge of the NWA name, and a few of them promised to take things national. And, you know, for various reasons, it did not work out. So, I mean, I'm glad that Billy Corgan has plans for the NWA. I'm glad that his first plan is, hey, let's promote the champion we actually have instead of the guy, you know, who I'm planning to build the company around. But, you know, I don't know where he's headed until he does something. And I don't know, and, you know, if you're Billy Corgan and you just got the rights to the NWA, I don't know that you'd do anything until you actually have something that's going to look impressive when you unveil it. Greg?
I think it's natural to be skeptical at this point about someone who is taking over or starting a wrestling company and making a lot of promises about taking it national and making it bigger and things like that. We've seen a lot of promotions that have tried that, even in the last 10 years, 15 years. They've come and gone. And I think it's natural to have a healthy dose of skepticism about this project becoming really a factor in the American wrestling landscape, or you know, worldwide wrestling landscape for that matter. So certainly we saw some things when Billy Corgan was running Impact that were promising. I don't know how that will translate to the NWA here. It's a lot of kind of sit back and wait, because I don't think we're really going to see anything major from that group until maybe 2018 at the earliest, maybe first quarter, second quarter of 2018. So it's hard to comment on, you know, just the comments that Billy Corgan has made about his plans. And he's been sort of coy and vague about what he wants to do with the NWA. Unfortunately, it's a lot of things we've heard before from promoters who've taken over companies or who've started companies with big plans, and we never really saw the fruits of those labors. So again, I think you've got to have some skepticism. Show me first. Don't tell me, show me. So until that, we just kind of wait.
Yeah, I mean, I wish him well. He's obviously a fan of the business, but you know, I mean, he's done Resistance Pro Wrestling, and he's, you know, been involved in TNA, and I mean, all I can hope is that he's picked up a lot of wisdom from doing that, because, you know, things didn't work out for him in either of those ventures.
And even then,
right.
I mean, you had a guy like Jeff Jarrett who had the family name, the experience working under his father, the experience running Impact, and you know, when he got GFW off the ground, he couldn't get anybody to buy the tapes to show on television. So,
yeah.
You know, that's where the difficulty is going to come for Billy Corgan.
I think that's fair.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the one good thing that I think was the fact that they got on to at least some form of national platform, because I know that Championship Wrestling from Hollywood is on that Fight TV app. So if nothing else, at least get maybe one or two people to see it. And the fact that they have finally phased out the concept of the regional territories, which to me just doesn't work in the 21st century, especially when you got so many successful independent promotions, you know, from Evolve, and, you know, ROH started off, you know, as a small independent, and look where it is. But yeah, it is a tough situation. You know, you got to actually do it instead of just, you know, or show me something as opposed to just saying it. And again, I wish Corgan the best of luck. I hope he has learned a lot from the other ventures he have, but you know, it's a tough hill to battle, especially in this day and age, because like you said, you know, like those GFW tapes, you know, he could not get that thing going with all that history that Jared had. You know, it just was not successful. And it just goes to show you that you really almost got to have like almost like a financial advisor almost to help you get anything going in the 21st century for professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not easy. And you know, that's the problem with the wrestling business is you're going to have a hard time finding somebody who you can trust. I mean, in order to help advise you, you can ask Dixie Carter how that works. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's especially for somebody from outside the wrestling business. I mean, maybe now that Billy's learned something, he can, he can make things happen. And I wish the best for him. It's not an easy business. All right. Anything else, Kenny?
No, that is it. That is all that I have. And I want to thank you guys so much for taking my phone call. And you guys have a good rest of the night.
Okay. You too. Thank you. All right. Kenny drops off, and that opens up a line for you at 515-605-9345. Let's see, we've got a lot more going on and a lot more to talk about, and your calls will be part of it as we continue. Wrestling Night in America will come back on PW Torch Livecast after this word.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And Wrestling Night in America returns here on PW Torch Livecast. Torch columnist Pat McNeil along with Torch columnist Greg Parks, 515-605-9345. Say, kids, if you just can't get enough pro wrestling podcasts, pro wrestling writing, anything involving professional wrestling, if you can't get enough comments and opinions, you should probably go visit our VIP section. Go to pwtorch.com/govip. Join us, $10 a month, $99 a year. You get the ad-free PW Torch VIP website, which some would say justifies the cost alone of getting a VIP membership. You get all of the regular free shows, like this one, except the commercials get taken out. So you get to hear more of us and less about our sponsors, and that's sometimes a good thing. You also get every week the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter delivered to your inbox. You can look at it in PDF format on most tablets. You'll like it. And you can get bonus VIP audio shows, like, for example, the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, which goes up every Sunday, in which we do a Mystery Science Theater-like 3000, like Journey, along with an episode of something on the WWE Network, or the Bruce Mitchell audio show, or The Fix with Todd Martin, or the daily Wade Keller Hotline, where Wade runs down the important news of the day. There are, in fact, so many podcasts that I cannot keep track of them all, and they're all available for you. So pwtorch.com/govip, that's the way you do it. Join now. And we return to the live show. Pat McNeil, Greg Parks here with you, 515-605-9345. While we have a moment, Greg, I think I'll go over the results from NXT last night in Omaha, because Raw and SmackDown aren't exactly on tour this weekend. Let's see. It was Roderick Strong beating Brennan Williams, Ember Moon over Vanessa Bourne, Killian Dane beating Fabian Aichner. Yes, Fabian Aichner's out there. That's good for him. Lars Sullivan defeating Cassius Ohno. I think that's an indication, Greg, of how quickly Lars Sullivan is going to rise up the NXT roster, assuming he hasn't already.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're seeing that on TV as well.
Yeah, he's just killing. I'm waiting for him to show up. I'm waiting for him to show up on Raw as Braun Strowman's new tag team partner. NXT tag title match. It was Eric Young and Alexander Wolf of Sanity beating the former Red Dragon, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly by countout. Kairi Sane defeats Bianca Belair. Aleister Black defeats the Velveteen Dream. They've done a good job setting up that feud on television. And in the main event, Drew McIntyre retains over Adam Cole and Andrade Cien Almas. More tours coming up with the Raw brand or the NXT brand. Let's see, NXT is in Florida next weekend. Yeah, I'd say they are. They should be in Gainesville, Jacksonville, and Largo. So check them out if you are so inclined. All right, we're going to be brave again. We're going to go to the phones to the 814 area code. 814, please state your name and town. You are on Wrestling Night in America as soon as this button pushes. Here we go. Hold on. Yeah. It's just going to be like... You're on the air. Hello.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Of course it is. How you doing, Ryan?
Okay, good. First question I have for you is, this has been speculated in the last week. Do you think Raw will invade SmackDown by dressing up in Halloween costumes, possibly as WWE Legends or some other wacky costume, or do you think that's too wacky of a storyline for WWE, as some experts have stated?
I mean, they've done the Halloween party bit on SmackDown before. My guess, Greg, and I could be completely off on this, is that there'll be a costume party, and at some point in the costume party, you know, some of the guys in costume unmask as the Raw wrestlers, and they beat up the SmackDown wrestlers as part of a retaliation for last week's Under Siege. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that would be the way to do it. It would be hard to have the entire Raw roster kind of sneak in, dressed up as in costume for Halloween. You know, if it was just two or three guys, it may be easier to pull that off. But, you know, the other side of that is, if you're doing one of the backstage skits that WWE likes to do, the Halloween skits where you have, you know, a big room and a lot of people involved in it, and many of them are, you know, revealed to be the SmackDown wrestlers, then you could have all the extras as the mingling around as the Raw roster, although at some point you'd kind of have to question, with all these people commingling, how one of the Raw wrestlers isn't found out as, you know, as they're talking back and forth, something like that. So that would be one issue. I think it's a cute idea, but I think it's going to take really good execution to be able to pull it off. And it could be a little too silly for the gravity of the storyline. I mean, the SmackDown beatdown of Raw on Monday night was very serious, and you know, it was,
well,
it was treated as such. And to involve costumes and that, things like that, that may be a little too light for the gravitas of the situation.
It was treated as serious, except for Dana Brooke running away from the SmackDown roster, which became, which went viral as a sort of a meme, and in fact went so viral that WWE commented about it on their website. So that just went full circle. Yeah, that's my guess. That's probably how I would do it. But your mileage may vary, and if you've read my articles before, you know WWE doesn't always agree with my ideas on doing things.
Okay. My second question is on Jerry Lawler. I saw him wrestle on Friday night, and I noticed he did two new moves I've never seen him done. Maybe you've seen him use them before. It was the Stone Cold Stunner and the Rock Bottom. Have you seen Mr. Lawler use these moves before?
Personally, no, I haven't, but he was wrestling on an independent show?
Yes, it was International Wrestling Cartel, and he was wrestling one of Lance Storm's students. Was actually in Wheeling.
Well, okay, the Stunner is an easy enough move to execute, as is, you know, as is the Rock Bottom for an experienced wrestler. I think that as long, you know, I mean, Rock Bottom, you need the other guy to get up for it, but I don't think they're two popular moves which, you know, aren't as difficult as some of the stuff Lawler has done before, like coming off of the middle rope or what have you, or a pile driver. So I'm in favor of it. Greg?
Yeah, the thing with independent and non-televised shows is you'll get a lot of that, you know, the wrestlers copying some big moves by big-name wrestlers that they know will get a pop out of the crowd. I remember going to an independent show at the ballpark in Buffalo where the Bisons play AAA baseball one time, and the main event was – I want to say it was Al Snow against somebody. It was two former ECW wrestlers who were wrestling, and they went all around the stadium, and they were doing, you know, the Rock Bottoms, the Stone Cold Stunners, all of those – moves made famous by wrestlers that came before him. So that's something that's pretty common, I think, on non-televised and indie shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically good for Jerry Lawler.
Okay. And I thought a question for you is, I don't know if you have any experience, but based on your age range, you might have an answer to this question. Have you ever been to anything called Outlaw Wrestling Federation back in the 80s and 70s where they weren't really called independent shows, but they were called outlaw shows?
Once in the 90s, I worked as a manager on a show that was called an outlaw show in South Carolina. But the reason it was called an outlaw show is because apparently they didn't register it with the State Athletic Commission. That I think is the only way you can truly be an outlaw show these days. No, I never went to any of the outlaw shows. I mean, the most famous Fed, which was considered an outlaw Fed, was when Angelo Poffo ran ICW and had his sons as the lead guys. Greg's younger than I am, so I don't know about the chances of
that.
Yeah,
I hate to play the age card, but I think I was too young for the true outlaw promotions.
Yeah, so nowadays, I guess the definition of an outlaw promotion is if you have a state with an athletic commission, a company not, you know, reporting a show to the athletic commission. Does that make sense?
The reason why I asked is Bo James had told me that they were really big in the 80s in West Virginia. And I get a lot of shows in West Virginia. I just found that pretty intriguing that they were called outlaw shows instead of indie shows.
Well, you know, the other thing is, I mean, I don't know what it was like in the 80s, but more recently, West Virginia does not regulate professional wrestling, which is probably one reason why there are so many indie shows there, because nobody's coming in to take a cut of it. So, yeah, back in the day, outlaw meant anything that wasn't, anything that wasn't part of the unofficial, WWF, NWA, AWA monopoly.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. That's okay. Ryan drops off that up the live for you, 515-605-9345. And Greg, back in the 80s, there wasn't a lot out there that wasn't part of the NWA or the AWA or WWF. You were affiliated. Most of the territories were affiliated with at least one of those companies.
Absolutely. You had to do it to survive, to get, you know, the names, the big names coming to your town and coming to your promotion. You had to book through them.
Yep. That's kind of how it works. Okay, so we're coming up on these next 2 days. We have the follow-up tomorrow night Raw in Baltimore, the follow-up to the Under Siege that was going on. Kurt Angle threatened by Shane McMahon. SmackDown guys beat up the Raw guys. I'm trying to think if there was anything special other than that, because I mean we're waiting for the Raw team to be announced for Survivor Series, and like we said earlier, whether Roman Reigns is on it or not, can't really tell. But the only other things that they're talking about on WWE.com are maybe we'll get some more follow up to Jason Jordan and Elias, or you know. Or maybe we'll see what Alexa Bliss is up to, or that sort of thing. They don't really have any matches announced yet.
Yeah, with so many of the big names are tied up in that Team Raw match, and then you've got Reigns and Wyatt out, so they're not doing anything here coming up. But you've also got the top champions, the women's champion, the tag champion, the Intercontinental champion on Raw, who will be facing their counterpart on SmackDown. So. It's a little hard to have a feud with someone on another brand, so really it's kind of a holding pattern, at least for this past week.
Yeah, and maybe we will find out more about what's going on. They have to do something to fill 3 hours, last time I checked. As a matter of fact, they're so bereft of news that they actually put up on the news section the gem that, Kurt Angle will be on the Raw from the UK a week from tomorrow.
Oh, thank goodness.
Actually, unlike last time when they had him put Dean and Miz in charge, which, of course, made no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Angle, hey, this is a big night for Angle being in charge leading up to Survivor Series. What with his brand? What's that term I'm thinking of? Oh, yeah, Under Siege.
They're under siege, yes. I'm wondering if the siege will continue all the way to all the way overseas there.
It just might.
All right. Let's see. But yeah, I'm trying to remember. Okay, I was trying to get the list of matches for Tuesday night on SmackDown because they're going to be doing because they are going to be, they actually have some stuff planned for their show. I know it's hard to believe. Other than what I'm guessing will be the Halloween party and the sneak attack by the Raw guys. Okay, what else do we have? I do want to run over. We do have results from last night. ROH in Mount Pleasant at the Soaring Eagle Casino. The Soaring Eagle Tournament. Dalton Castle beat Flip Gordon. Frankie Kazarian beat Jay White. Matt Taven beat Jay Lethal. Huh? How about that? Cody and Christopher Daniels fought to a time limit draw, so neither man advanced. And then in the last tournament match for the first round, Silas Young beat Cheeseburger. So in the other main event, it was the Motor City Machine Guns defeating the Dogs, and the Bullet Club of Adam Page and Nick Jackson to keep the ROH tag team titles. And the main event, Dalton Castle beat Silas, Frankie and Matt Taven to win the Soaring Eagle tournament. So Dalton Castle on a roll as we head into final battle, and it looks like we're going to get that Cody versus Dalton match that the world's been waiting for, Greg, and they've been building to for the past 6 months.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. I know there were some eyebrows raised when I think it was two pay-per-views ago we didn't get Cody versus Dalton Castle, or maybe it was the most recent one. Yeah, I think they just gave Dalton Castle a little more time, a few more notches in his belt here with the winning the Soaring Eagle Cup here will certainly help him get some momentum heading into a match against Cody.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, 515-605-9345 and pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Go ahead and stack up online. And when we come back, we will try to get hold of our guest and hopefully talk a little bit about what's coming up on Raw and SmackDown. So stay where you are.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, we're back with Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast, where the number is 515-605-9345. I am Pat McNeil. He is Greg Parks. We're going to try to make a phone call to Greg, to the one person I asked to appear on the show who did not turn us down emphatically enough, and we'll see how that goes. And as for a guest for next week, I'm told that it depends in a lot of ways as to who is actually doing the post-game show here on PW Torch Livecast after Bound for Glory. And, you know, I don't want to say people are down on the show, but, you know, and I'm not down on the show. I'm looking forward to seeing Moose and Stefan Bonner and Bobby Lashley and King Mo. But, you know, not everybody agrees for some reason.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it just to kind of, as we talked about earlier, see what direction they had post Bound for Glory with, you know, with Jeff Jarrett out. And it's not a new regime taking over, but I think the power structure may look a little different.
Yeah, I think we'll know a lot after Bound for Glory, where they tape their next, you know, 12 or 14 weeks of television. All right, so let's see if this works here. We are going to call one of our friends who actually follows professional wrestling and more importantly follows Impact Wrestling, and that's a tough nut to crack here. Let's see if he's picking up though, because he was very busy when I was trying to text him earlier. Okay. Mm-hmm. One would think, though, that he's expecting. Okay. And look at that. It doesn't sound promising, Greg.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 9192.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's not going to work out very well.
5-1-4 is not available.
Come on.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished.
I really hate this. I really hate this board here, Greg. I just thought you should know that.
I can tell. It's tough night.
Yeah. Okay. 515-605-9345. All right. So, Greg, we were going to talk about SmackDown. A lot happened this past week. The part I enjoyed most, of course, was Sami Zayn doing his heel dance for Shane McMahon, and not changing the music, not changing anything, just acting like a big schmuck and with a big smile on his face. I thought that was magnificent.
That was really nice, and that was the opening segment of SmackDown this past week, where Sami Zayn rubbed it in Shane McMahon's face a little bit, I guess, that Kevin Owens beat Shane McMahon at Hell in a Cell, and Sami Zayn played a very big part in that. He and Kevin Owens, and his words selflessly, volunteered to be part of Team SmackDown for Survivor Series, and then put Sami Zayn in a match in the main event of that episode of SmackDown against Randy Orton, with the winner being able to take part on Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. Randy Orton ended up winning to earn a spot on the team. We'll see if Zayn gets another chance at some point down the line. I believe Kevin Owens will face Shinsuke Nakamura this coming week in a very similar match.
Yeah.
The winner of that match will get an opportunity to be on Team SmackDown. We also learned that Becky Lynch will be the captain of the women's elimination match representing Team SmackDown, as she won her match on SmackDown this past week, the Fatal 5-Way, also involving Tamina, Carmella, Naomi, and Charlotte. So Becky Lynch will captain the women's team against the Raw team, perhaps surprisingly captained by Alicia Fox. So that will be another elimination tag match at Survivor Series. We saw more this past week of AJ Styles and Jinder Mahal, that feud, which will probably commence in earnest after Survivor Series, and of course Jinder Mahal facing Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. AJ Styles defeated Sameer Singh this past week. He will face Sameer Singh this coming week on SmackDown, although I wouldn't expect a drastically different result to that match. The other match set for SmackDown this coming week, Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode, 2 out of 3 falls.
That's right. Oh my goodness. You know, at one time I really would have been excited about a Shinsuke Nakamura versus Kevin Owens feud. Now it's after seeing the past few months, not so much.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm kind of curious, Pat, on your opinion of the damage done to Shinsuke Nakamura. How much of it is WWE's booking, and how much do you think it is Nakamura just kind of going through the motions? And you know, it's obviously not the same Nakamura we saw in Japan, not the same Nakamura in ring wise that we saw in his NXT debut match against Sami Zayn. You know, who deserves more of the blame here for what we've seen from Nakamura on the main roster thus far?
Well, the thing is, you know, Nakamura's push is one of those that doesn't work unless he's out there killing dudes, and right now he's not out there killing dudes. So I think part of it has to be WWE's and especially Vince McMahon's. They have a, you know, Vince has a bit of a thing where if it didn't happen in WWE, it didn't happen. And I think now that's been extended to NXT. He's given, you know, Triple H has control over NXT, but, you know, just because something worked on NXT doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work on the main roster. And it's especially not going to work on the main roster if they don't try it that way. So if WWE wanted Shinsuke Nakamura to be a killer, it was incumbent on them to sort of step up and say, "Hey, guy, you know, we need you to, you know, you can slack off on the house shows, but when the TV cameras are on, we really need you to step it up." I think that's
one of the other interesting things that happened on SmackDown is Sin Cara defeated Baron Corbin again, this time by disqualification. And of course, Baron Corbin is United States champion, is slated to face Intercontinental Champion from Raw, The Miz, at Survivor Series. Kind of interesting booking of Corbin. And we're still a few weeks out, so certainly things could change. But knowing that he's going to be in a champion versus champion match at Survivor Series, having him lose 2 weeks in a row to Sin Cara. Pat, you know, the secondary matches, the champion versus champion matches are out there. Lesnar versus Mahal, Alexa Bliss versus Natalya, the Raw Tag Team Champions of Ambrose and Rollins against the Usos, again, Miz versus Baron Corbin. Of those champion versus champion matches, interbrand matches, what's the one that's most intriguing to you?
Be honest with you, probably Ambrose and Rollins against the Usos. I think that could be fun. I'm interested in Alexa Bliss versus Natalya. I'm not expecting, you know, a 6.25 star classic, but I mean, I think they probably will have good chemistry with each other. But tag match is probably going to be the best of those four.
Yeah, I think it'll be the best in ring wise. Certainly, I don't see the Miz and Baron Corbin really matching up very well. Lesnar and Mahal. I think most people expect that to be pretty short. I think that. From a work rate standpoint, Ambrose and Rollins versus the Usos is head and shoulders above the rest of those title versus title matches.
Yes, and that's something we're going to be talking about. Actually, 3 weeks from tonight, we'll be doing the post game show following Survivor Series. That's going to be something to behold, I think. All right, let's spend a minute talking about Raw because, and more importantly, talking about the. I think that this horse has been beaten to death over the past few days, but we haven't done it yet. So, and that's really what's important. So AJ Styles came over to Raw, you know, to fill in for Bray Wyatt, and Finn Balor defeats him in a very exciting match to be taking one of the top guys of SmackDown, former WWE champion, and beating him. And then the next night, Finn Balor gets killed by Kane. The question is, you know, why do you bother putting Finn Balor over AJ Styles if he's just going to be fodder for the next push of Kane?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it being a Raw branded pay-per-view, Finn Balor going over Styles was probably the right move, no matter what plans you had for Balor next. Certainly, if you're putting AJ Styles against Jinder Mahal and wanting that to be your WWE title feud on SmackDown, you could make a case that Styles then should have gone over Balor at the pay-per-view to give him some momentum against Mahal. But, you know, we saw Styles come off two, I think, clean losses to Baron Corbin in a row, and he was still put in a match with put in a feud with Jinder Mahal. So clearly WWE is not concerned about the losses that AJ Styles is taking vis-a-vis his feud with Jinder Mahal. So right now, the priority, I guess, with Kane is, I'm assuming, a feud with Braun Strowman. And so, you know, Finn Balor doesn't have that feud with Bray Wyatt out of the picture for the time being. So he gets sacrificed. I think it's just as simple as that. We've seen WWE book Strowman as strong, as someone that they protect, someone that's important to their main event scene. And with Kane being involved in a feud with him, they want to put Kane over, so the eventual Kane-Strowman match means something big. And Balor is just a guy sacrificed because he doesn't really have anything else big going on right now.
Well, it bothers me that they went to the trouble of turning Braun Strowman babyface, and their idea for, you know, having him continue to get over is a feud with Kane, which is what they did when they started trying to get Roman Reigns over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, plus,
yeah,
Strowman's already
not,
over.
That's not a you match know? That. That's yeah. Not, yeah, that's not going to. That's not a match that's going to do Strowman any favors. We've seen Strowman at his best when he's able to throw guys around. I'm assuming what we're going to see is a lot of smoke and mirrors, both figuratively and perhaps literally, with Strowman and Kane. It's going to be a car crash of the highest order, low IQ type booking in order to, this isn't going to be a 15-minute match that stays in the ring the entire time. Strowman versus Kane is probably going to be a spectacle. So, I think that's where Strowman is at his best that we've seen him, unless he's got a guy who can really bump around and make him look good, and Kane's just not that guy.
No, it's not, and it's unfair to really think of Kane as doing that. I mean, I think they want to get one more big pay-per-view match. You know, they want to get one more big pay-per-view match and big feud out of Kane, and this is it. And, I don't think people are going to suddenly turn on Braun Strowman and start cheering for Kane, but they can't make Braun Strowman into a traditional WWE babyface like they tried to do with Roman Reigns and have it work. I mean,
Reason they went with Kane here, even though he's not the best matchup from a wrestling standpoint with Braun Strowman, is you built Strowman up to this point now where, you know, a guy like Finn Balor against Strowman isn't going to work because Strowman has just destroyed everybody. Kane is a guy with the history behind him. He's a guy that WWE can build as the big red monster, build him up with wins over guys like Finn Balor and make him seem like a true threat to Braun Strowman, and they can't do that with everybody else on the roster. So I think that's WWE's thinking going into this match is, you know, if we built Kane the right way, given his monster tendencies, there's a story there to be told with the monster Braun Strowman. And also, you know, people may buy Kane as a viable threat where they may not buy a smaller guy in that position right now.
Well, it does seem like we're going to be in the. It does seem like we're going to be watching WWE build up new monsters for Strowman to face every few months. And I guess that's fine because it means they're not building up new monsters for Roman Reigns to face every few months. So,
it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, it could all work out here. All right. Again, our number is 515-605-9345. When we come back, it's that moment we've all been dreading as we go over the lineup and possibilities for Impact Wrestling's Canadian Bound for Glory next Sunday at this time. Remember, folks, this is PW Torch Livecast, and this is Wrestling Night in America, and we'll be back after this timeout.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And we're back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. The number 515-605-9345. Program alert, I will be on the Tuesday morning, late Wednesday, Monday night edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. As Greg Parks is has been on many times, I'm just trying to catch up, Greg. And Greg, when was your last appearance?
Not this past week, but I think the week before that, I was on covering SmackDown on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast.
Okay, so be sure to check that out. It's over at Podcast One, and the feed I know is over. And I know you can find a subscription link to it over at pwtorch.com if you absolutely must. All right, so it's time. We're going to talk about Bound for Glory. The 13th Bound for Glory takes place next Sunday in beautiful Ottawa, Canada. This is at the Aberdeen Pavilion in Ottawa. And we have what I think is the full lineup, Greg. I've got 8 matches down here. Does that sound about right?
Yes, at this point. I know that they were advertising on Impact this past week. They were advertising Alberto El Patron. So They weren't advertising him in a match with Jeff Jarrett or anything like that. Obviously, that they got rid of whatever they had had ready for that one. But I would expect him in some form or fashion on the show, maybe an unannounced match or just an appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine going to the trouble of getting Alberto El Patron and then, you know, bringing him to the pay-per-view and not using him in a match. But then again, this is Impact. You know, you never know exactly what's going to happen.
Stranger things have happened, true.
All right, so well, I guess we'll start with what's going to be the opener. Team Impact versus Team AAA, so where Team AAA of Elijo de Fantasma, Pagano, and Texano take on Team Impact of EC3, Eddie Edwards, and James Storm. One of these things is not like the other, Greg.
And this was born out of, you know, James Storm not liking the AAA invasion, as he called it, of Impact and you know, how he involved Eddie Edwards and Ethan Carter. You know, it seemed like a heel promo he was cutting, and yet they're the babyface team. So the dynamics are a little off to me in this match. But those are some big names. Storm, Ethan Carter, and Eddie Edwards. It almost felt like Impact just kind of took the biggest names that weren't doing anything, didn't have a singles feud, and threw them in this match just to get them onto the show.
Okay, we also have Rosemary taking on Taya Valkyrie in a Red Wedding match. No, a Red Wedding match does not mean you shoot your opponent full of arrows and then slit their throat. It means it's a first blood match.
Is that a Game of Thrones reference?
Yes, it is.
Ah. I've never seen the show, never read the book, so I'm at least up on
that
pop
culture
reference.
But you were able to figure out that it's a Game of Thrones reference, and really that's the important thing.
Exactly. I think this will be an interesting match. Rosemary has really shined on Impact, and Taya, since coming over a few months ago, along with Johnny Impact, they've built her up pretty well, too. So... This is an undercard match I'm really looking forward to on Bound for Glory.
And yes, if you're in attendance in Ottawa, first of all, call us after the show. Second of all, if you're in attendance during this match and the band starts striking up the Reigns of Castamere, run for the exits. That's all I can tell you. All right, huge matchup, a Monsters Ball. It's going to be Abyss versus Grotto. Yeah, and if Grotto loses, he loses his work visa and is travel banned outside the United States. Good deal, Greg.
This has actually been a really long-term storyline on Impact, with Grotto first trying to find someone to marry so that he can stay in the United States, settling on Laurel Van Ness, only to find out that she's Canadian. So enter Joseph Park, who got Grotto.
Well, actually, that could have worked for Grotto, given where they're moving.
True, yeah. He may not need to worry about working in America so much anymore. But Joseph Park came to the scene, sort of rescued Grotto. However, he took advantage of Grotto, and Grotto confronted him this past week on Impact. And Joseph Park almost felt kind of like a heel turn when he proposed this Monsters Ball match and then said that his brother Abyss would be facing Grados. So, I don't know really what to expect here. Is it going to be mostly the hardcore style we've seen from the Monsters Ball match, or will it be comedy with we've seen from Grados? So, I'm not sure how they're going to play that, but we'll see. And I'd expect Grado to win.
Well, I expect them to take all the leftover footage they have from the Hardys and speed it up and put it to the Benny Hill theme. And I'm expecting comedy, in other words.
Okay.
Hard to believe. Comedy. Okay. Six Sides of Steel tag team match. Yes, Moose and Stefan Bonner, Lashley and King Mo inside the heptagon or whatever. It's the Six Sides of Steel. I don't know what – I mean, this should be entertaining. I'm kind of curious as to where they're going with this. Greg?
Yeah, you've got Stefan Bonner and King Mo who don't have a ton of pro wrestling experience. So I think being inside the Six Sides of Steel and allowing them to brawl a little bit, you know, use the cage as a weapon, I think that's going to help those two. This has been a storyline that's been – it's – a lot of people don't like it. I've found it to be really entertaining. It's been a storyline progression that from the start has made sense with Bobby Lashley training with the American Top Team MMA group and them invading Impact week after week and trying to get Lashley away from pro wrestling and to concentrate on MMA. And then, you know, Moose kind of standing up and representing professional wrestling, recruiting Stefan Bonner to invade the American Top Team camp a couple weeks ago and destroy some memorabilia. So that's led to Lashley and King Mo taking on Moose and Stefan Bonner here. So probably a lot of brawling the good guys representing professional wrestling, I'm sure, will win out.
A lot of brawling and a lot of smiles. I'm sure it'll be great. I hope this isn't the end of Lashley in Impact Wrestling because I very much like having him on.
I would be surprised if it is.
You never know. The women's the knockouts title match is now a three-way match. Sienna defending against Gail Kim and Allie. And I would have a hard time believing that Gail Kim is going to lose this. I mean, this seems like it's been set up specifically for her to win.
Yeah, and she's mentioned retirement more than once in promos on Impact TV. So. She could end up winning here, end up retiring as champion, and then doing some sort of tournament to crown a new champion. I wouldn't completely rule that out. I'm actually looking more forward to Rosemary versus Taya than this match. Sienna and Allie don't really do a whole lot for me as far as characters go. Gail Kim is sort of a steadying presence within Impact, so she'll be looked at as probably the glue that holds this match together. So. I think it could be okay, but it's not high up there as far as anticipation for me.
Well, I mean, but this is what we've got, and at least these people have been in Impact for a certain amount of time. Unlike the next match, where Ohio versus Everything, the Crist Brothers, take on the Latin American exchange of Ortiz, Santana, Homicide, Conan, and Diamante in a street fight. Somehow, I don't think they're going to take on all five of those guys.
Yeah, I don't know, 51-50 street fight. We haven't seen a lot of those, so I'm not sure really what to expect. This is another feud that's from the LAX point of view, they've been built up really well within Impact, mm-hmm. and they've been a very featured act, and I don't know how much of that is because Conan is involved, and he's also involved as sort of a liaison between some of the promotions there within Impact. OVE of Dave and Jay Crist, as you mentioned, are pretty new on the scene in Impact, and they've been one of the tag teams who stood head and shoulders above the others and has really stood up to the LAX when a lot of teams have sort of backed down. So 51-50 street fight, I would expect a lot of chaos.
Mm-hmm. I think that's safe. Speaking of chaos, a six-way match for the X Division title. Trevor Lee defending against Desmond Xavier, Matt Sydal, Petey Williams, Sanjay Dutt, and Hector Garza Jr. I'd be surprised if it ends up again. I'm expecting Matt Seidel to win, but you know, Sanjay Dutt is always a possibility, given that he's one of the producers there.
Mm-hmm. And I think Garza Jr. is a possibility. He's been in the main event picture. He's gotten a title match against Eli Drake on TV. He teamed with Johnny Impact to face Eli Drake and Chris Adonis either this past week or a couple weeks ago on Impact. So he's been in a prominent spot on Impact that's not a familiar spot for X Division wrestlers. So to see him in here almost feels a little bit like a ringer. Certainly Trevor Lee has done a really nice job as X Division champion. So if he retains, I would be totally okay with that as well.
Yeah, that there would be no problem with that whatsoever. All right, and of course the main event, Eli Drake with Chris Adonis in his corner against Johnny Impact, Nitro Morrison with nobody in his corner.
I'm not sure what Impact wanted to get out of Eli Drake as champion. His championship victory came sort of out of nowhere. Certainly he hasn't, you know, move the needle in any sort of discernible way, although I don't really think with the climate that the company's in that anyone in this company could really move the needle as far as ratings go. So it's hard to blame that on Eli Drake, but this feels like the right time for Johnny Impact to win. I think he's more over and a better choice for champion right now than Eli Drake is. But again, I don't know what the purpose of wanting Eli Drake is champion, unless it was just to get the title on a heel heading into Bound for Glory so that a babyface could win it. It was certainly an out of left field choice to have Drake win it. I don't think necessarily that he's done anything wrong as champion. I've always enjoyed his promos. I think he's very confident on the mic and feels like he believes what he's saying, which is unfortunately a trait that a lot of wrestlers don't have these days. His in-ring is passable. I think it's a notch above Jinder Mahal, but it's no great shakes. Whereas, you know, with Johnny Impact, you know, you're getting a proven guy who's been champion in Lucha Underground. He's been in prominent positions in WWE in the past, and you know that he can carry the ball. So I would expect Johnny Impact to win the title here.
Yeah. And then the question is, where does Alberto El Patron fit in? Is he a villain who's going to go after Johnny Impact? Is he a hero who's going to challenge Eli Drake? Where I'm not sure yet, and you know maybe they're not sure either.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I think he comes back as a babyface, sort of vindicated after being suspended by Impact Wrestling. So whether it's an in-ring promo, I mean, you've got 8 matches here, and yeah. I'm assuming it's only a 3-hour show. So
here's hoping.
You've got a Patron segment in there somewhere, which would be the equivalent of a 9th match, even if he doesn't wrestle. So that's a lot to fit in that window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and we'll be covering it one way or another. Next week, I think it's pretty safe to say that it'll be the last time in a while that we're covering a live Impact pay-per-view, because they only did two they did 3 last year, and it looks like they're on track to do 2 next year.
Yeah, Slammiversary and Bound for Glory are usually the 2 big ones for Impact, and you never know. I mean, they could make the choice to ramp up pay-per-views. I don't really think that it's in their best interest to do so unless they can do it cheap in Canada. If they're sort of relocating some of their base there, they may be able to do it there. But I wouldn't expect a drastic upswing in the number of pay-per-views next year.
Yeah, that would be kind of a surprise too. Okay, when we come back, we will wrap up this week's discussion of professional wrestling. And then we'll get you ready for next week. This is Wrestling Night in America. Stay tuned on PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, it's Jim Valley. If you cut promos in front of a mirror, if you made a belt out of cardboard, if your parents knew to leave you alone when wrestling was on TV, then this is the show for you. Wrestling Road Stories with Jim Valley. We'll talk about and to the stars that made your childhood great. From the WWWF to WWE, WCW, Crockett, Memphis, Florida, Mid-South, and Portland, we'll talk about the unbelievable stories of running the roads and keeping kayfabe, and who knows, some of the stories might even be true. Join me Wednesdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific in the United States, Wrestling Road Stories here on the Pro Wrestling Torch Livecast with me, Jim Valley.
PW Torch Livecast, the number is 515-605-9345, and it's been a busy week, and things will continue along that line for a while. So this morning, that was the Best of the Super Juniors Tag Team Tournament at Cork and Hall, Greg. And let's see, the main event was, good grief. All right, the semifinals are tomorrow. Okay, semifinals are tomorrow. Sho and Yo take on Bushi and Takahashi. Taguchi and ACH take on Kanemaru and Desperado. And then we wait for the finals on Sunday, a week from now. Also on this coming Sunday at Power Struggle in Osaka, I believe Kenny Omega is defending his U.S. title again. Could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see here. Kanemaru and Desperado beat Jushin Liger and Tiger Mask, so they're out, and Taichi and Taka Michinoku are out. It's a different time of year, but New Japan is building to something. They're actually building towards Okada and Naito, and I think they're doing a heck of a job of it.
Yeah, that's probably the next really big match for Omega, and we've seen Naito carry the ball before. I think he's really getting heated back up again with the G1 performance and everything like that. So, it may not be Omega Okada, but I think Omega and Naito will be worthy of Wrestle Kingdom if, in fact, they get together. I think it's January.
Yeah, that's going to be coming up at the Tokyo Dome in January. Let's see. All right, also today we had the Beyond Wrestling had their first iPay-per-view on Powerbomb TV. It was Zack Sabre Jr. gets the win. It looks like it also looks like we're going to get Martin Stone, a.k.a. Danny Burch, against I forget who J.T. Dunn's partner is in Juicy Product. That's going to take place in 2 weeks on November the 12th. And, yes, Jimmy Jacobs is back wrestling on a pay-per-view already. So a lot going on. I'm guessing Sean Radican will have more updates as to what happened today on the Beyond Wrestling show. But a team that was also on the Beyond Wrestling show are the guys who play the main guys on LAX doing their job as I forget what it is, team EYFBO, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, such an interesting time to see these guys. You see them in Impact Wrestling, you see them in Beyond Wrestling, you see, as you mentioned, Danny Burch in Beyond, and then in NXT as well. So it's really an interesting time to see all these guys, and it's great for independent wrestlers. I mean, to have these doors, so many doors open and not closed because you work for this company, you can't work for this one. We've seen that in the past, and to a certain extent, true in some areas, but to see these guys and watch them be able to make a living in wrestling as much as they can and in as many companies as they can is good for the business.
Right. So, we've got the Powerbomb TV service. I think Flow Sports is dead. We have High Spots Wrestling, and I'm guessing WWN is warming back up. There's going to be a lot of ways to watch a lot of different indie shows. So I mean, even more than before, you can't really have regional wrestling promotions.
And kind of sad that we almost mentioned in passing that it looks like Flow Sports is dead. Flow Slam and it got off the ground with a lot of promise, I think, And then just unfortunately unraveling the way it did with Evolve and you know, things getting leaked and going to court and things like that. It's unfortunate that it had to happen that way.
Yes, it is. But that is, you know, that's what happened. Also, if you're following NXT, we're getting closer bit by bit to the War Games, where it'll be Roderick Strong and the Authors of Pain against the Undisputed Era against Sanity. And that's just going to be psychotic, I think.
Yeah, you know, we've gotten a lot of people saying, well, it's not the War Games that was the original. It's not the kind of War Games that had all those great matches. But, you know, I think WWE and NXT will book it in a way that it's, if nothing else, a really good spectacle, a really good match. So, you know, the anticipation is there, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. We didn't really talk about ratings. You know, for the past few weeks, WWE has basically put on a two-hour Raw, and the third hour has been the Enzo Amore show. And last week it hurt them. That was the biggest drop-off in some time between the first hour and the third hour. Even though Enzo didn't have the final segment, even though the final segment was SmackDown, you know, running around beating up Raw, you know, they didn't warn people it was coming. So, you know, I mean, I guess I like that they didn't warn people it was coming. It's sort of the message you send to the audience. Hey, this is what happens if you turn off, your show early. But, you know, it does say, I think that maybe the Enzo Amore experiment in the third hour of Raw might be coming to an end.
Yeah, and that beat down of the Raw roster that SmackDown did, it would have been hard to do that at any other point in the show because all of a sudden
right. Your
roster's wrecked and you don't have anyone to wrestle in the third hour. So, yeah, it was unfortunate that they had to do it at the end of the third hour when maybe the audience wasn't at its biggest. But like you said, it could train folks to not tune out too early and to stay for the whole show because there could be some big angle at the end, but also just the angle dictated that it happened at the end.
Yeah. I mean, it was, parts of it I liked and parts of it were kind of goofy. And I think the goofiness sort of continued over on SmackDown with Daniel Bryan, you know, hey Shane McMahon, what are you doing? And, you know, we're not really sure of who's good or who's evil or really why this happened in the first place.
I like the follow up on SmackDown. I like that they didn't do the obvious and just have Raw attack SmackDown as sort of payback. I also liked Daniel Bryan not being on board with the decision Shane McMahon made to take the roster to Raw and attack. That seems in character with who Daniel Bryan is, that he wouldn't approve of some mass attack like that. So I like that. As for the actual angle on Raw, I think if you look at it from a macro point of view, it got people talking. I think it was probably effective in building anticipation for every Raw versus SmackDown match at Survivor Series, not just the 5-on-5 elimination match, but now all of a sudden this is going to seep into all the title versus title matches as well. But from a micro point of view, when you actually break it down and look at the example you gave of AJ Styles earlier in the show, you got, you know, some of the baby faces on SmackDown really attacking without cause or justification the Raw roster. This was not a storyline or an angle that had been building. This was out of nowhere and felt completely out of place because there really isn't a real rivalry between Raw and SmackDown. So when you look at the micro of it, when you break it down into smaller parts like that, it really kind of falls apart. It's sort of a house of cards and falls in on itself. So even if the idea was good in the macro sense, the big picture sense of building anticipation for Survivor Series and getting a rivalry going between Raw and SmackDown, I think when you break it down, it really falls apart.
Well, I mean, it was good in a macro sense because, you know, ratings were up on SmackDown on Tuesday, and that's, you know, that's a positive. I guess I would question, though, whether it's going to carry over into tomorrow night's Raw. And, you know, actually, more than that, you have to give credit. WWE put out its third quarter numbers, and yes, the number of subscribers to the network went up this past quarter, which, you know, it should be something that's happening every quarter now that they're getting worldwide traction, but, you know, they haven't always done that. And I think it shows that all you need to keep pushing the needle forward, keep adding more subscribers, is to have Brock Lesnar defend the title 3 times in a quarter and, you know, and maybe add a Punjabi prison match in there somewhere.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Brock Lesnar. I mean, there were a lot of big matches that WWE put out on these pay-per-view events in the third quarter, even the secondary pay-per-views that we haven't seen WWE prioritize in the recent past. So, you know, I think that's a reason we saw the uptick in subscribers, too.
Mm-hmm. I think so. So we will be keeping tabs of all of that in the months to come. November's a big month for us, Greg. Bound for Glory next week, Survivor Series in 3 weeks. Fortunately, I haven't heard that we're doing Starcade, but because that's on a Saturday.
Yes, well, we have TakeOver before Survivor Series as well. That's a Saturday as well, but certainly we'll probably touch on that in the post-Survivor Series live cast that we do.
I'm expecting that somebody will ask us about things that happened at NXT TakeOver, so yes. Let's see here. Another big story. Another story online. Zack Ryder took his new girlfriend, Laurel Van Ness, on vacation this weekend. Aw, isn't social media wonderful?
How cute.
Yes, and it'll be Kenny Omega versus Trent Beretta for the U.S. title next Sunday at Power Struggle. So that's one more reason to watch. I don't know if it's a reason to wake up in the middle of the night and watch it.
I always thought Trent Beretta was underutilized kind of guy, so I'll be interested to see what kind of match he has with Omega.
So a lot of fun coming up in the weeks ahead. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Wrestling Night in America. Tomorrow is MMA Talk for Wrestling Fans, another show which some of you might enjoy. And you go to pwtorchlivecast.com. And you can read about all the shows that happen here during the week, not just this show, although this show is obviously your favorite. Greg, looking forward to it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, Pat.
And as for the rest of you, I talked earlier about becoming a VIP member here at pwtorch.com, and we're going to tell you exactly how you go about doing that, and we'll talk to you again next week for Bound for Glory. Good night, everybody.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is live.